everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and the political right, and on the political left is Shireen Gourbani. Good to see you, Shireen.
Hello, Natalie. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, listeners. We're so happy that you're with us.
Did you see I said the political middle and the political right? I mean, whatever.
We are representing both today. We are in such a busy time for folks that we're having a little bit of a hard time getting John Dugal. So, of course, please feel free to email him and tell him to show up or let us know if there's a Republican that you want us to get in the mix because we could use some alternates.
That's awesome. So much has been going on, and I can't help but want to just talk for a minute about what happened this week with the certification of the 2024 elections.
Did you see the insurrection on the 6th?
I did not.
Oh, there wasn't one.
There wasn't one.
Because we believe in a peaceful transfer of power.
I can't imagine what it was like for our current vice president, Kamala Harris, we can now all say her name correctly, to be the one that certifies this after being the one on the ballot.
Yeah.
What did you notice or see?
So what I noticed was an commitment to democracy that I fear may be, again, at risk. Mm-hmm. What I also noticed is, honestly, a really disturbing level of, is it national amnesia? Is it, you know, I mean, I think there are lots of contributing factors, but the way that people have forgotten what happened in this last transition, to me, is startling and terrifying. And I hope that we are committed to remembering this moment and setting an expectation that when it comes to transfer of government, we expect that it be peaceful, we expect that it be orderly, and we expect that when that is violated, that people suffer consequences for that.
Yeah, interesting. Shireen, I'm kind of reluctant to go here, but I'm going to do it.
Let's do it.
Just for fun. You know, Biden will be done in a few days here. I've been thinking in my mind about sort of how do I feel about Biden's presidency?
Sure.
And I have crystallized it to something that you won't like.
Oh, but that's okay.
But we'll just push it out there. So I'm going to do the four or five talking points and then get your reaction.
Okay.
He was supposed to be a transitionary guy after all those chaotic years of former President Trump, and he chose to run again.
Yep.
He did not handle Afghanistan well. He did not handle inflation well. He did not handle the border well. And most importantly, in my mind, he shouldn't have been on the ballot for a second time and got that all messed up. And even more importantly, because he wasn't transitionary, Donald Trump was reelected.
Yeah.
So I think it was a failed administration.
Oh, wow. Okay. So while I actually, going point for point here, would agree with many of the things that you've said, it was sort of suggested. It wasn't a promise, I don't want to say, but it was suggested that this would be a one-term presidency from the beginning. When it was clear that it was not, then there was no process for Democrats to have the debate of ideas that's so critical.
So was that the great failure to you?
To me, it was.
Yeah.
Because
I get it.
I don't know that while I'm incredibly grateful to the way that Kamala Harris stepped in and did, I believe, truly a remarkable job given the circumstances, I don't know that she would have been our candidate. I have to say Afghanistan, I mean, I would like us to acknowledge that the wheels were put in motion by Trump for that to happen.
Sure.
I also have to say, as failed as that was, as horrific as the loss of life was, the American public was ready for that to be over as well. So that's difficult.
Yeah.
Inflation, to me, I guess, you know, as your expertise as an economist, is there more that the administration could have done to reduce inflation? I think about the challenge that we had with increasing interest rates. I think about the efforts to curb price gouging. I think about all of the things that I felt like the Biden administration was trying to do to really get a handle on that, and understanding that we were still in that long tail of COVID.
I think it's just there was too much spending.
Too much
public money put out in the economy.
Sure. I guess I would add to this list the things that I'm concerned about, and I would love to maybe give a few moments later to talk about the successes, which include the Inflation Reduction Act, driving down the price of health care for elderly Americans, increasing access to health care in this country. Those were some of the key things that were happening. Manufacturing
so,
jobs.
So we've got these few days left. And he's designating two new national monuments in California. We've been on the receiving end of this before.
So I'm guessing what were you doing in 1996 when this happened to us?
I was living it in real time.
In real time.
Let me give you an example.
I
remember preparing the PowerPoint presentation that Governor Leavitt was showing in the Oval to make the case for a land trade out of the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument, that would at least be some saving grace for our state. And to this day, if you look at the map of Utah and you have all the blue squares of state lands, if you look inside Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument, no blue squares.
Yeah.
You look in Bear's Ears, blue squares.
Blue squares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If, and the public doesn't know what that means. Those are SITLA or institutional trust lands that were giving to us at statehood, and they become in holdings in national monuments and worthless to the state because you have no access to them and all those sorts of things.
Yep, that's right. So these are interesting pieces of land. If I'm remembering, I know a little bit more about one, the Chuckwalla Monument, which is next to Joshua Tree that I visited during during the break, and have to say that a truly incredible piece of landscape. When we think about our national parks here in Utah and visit other national parks, I do think it's a bit of a stunning contrast. Mm-hmm. The kind of beauty that we have is different mm-hmm. than beauty in other places. One of my personal favorites is not a very popular park, which is Theodore Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota. But the way that you see these landscapes and the uniqueness and being able to take my kid out into these spaces and have him run on these beautiful protected lands is something that I cherish. And I know a lot of Americans cherish because they were there as well. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. We've already talked about pardons. Now there's the national monuments, but there's also something that happens at the end of a presidential term, and that is the granting of presidential citizens awards, medals, and the like. And Liz Cheney got the President's Citizen Medal for her work on the House Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection. And Senator Romney accepted the posthumous award to George Romney. So a couple of Utah, you know, similar connections, Wyoming, Utah connections there.
Do you know much about George Romney? Can you help listeners?
Just he was a CEO of a car company. I mean, I can't remember. It was different back then, but it was like the Chrysler of the time, if I'm thinking right.
Yeah.
But anyway, a Michigan guy, Motor City, and governor of Michigan.
Yep, who did a lot on housing.
Uh-huh.
And civil rights.
Yeah, and ran for president twice, I believe.
I think that's right.
Anyway, similar to his son.
Huge contribution. When we think about the end of Romney's service, which is now concluded, mm-hmm. right? The legacy of service to this country that family has had is remarkable.
Yeah. Now, we also had Jimmy Carter pass away.
Goodness. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Did you ever meet him or anything?
I did not. But I have to say, one of my favorite presidents, which is probably unsurprising to listeners, difficult time. I think to serve when we think about the larger economic and political wins mm-hmm. at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, you know, a couple of things that stood out to me in the retrospectives. You know, one was a line from his acceptance of the Nobel Peace Prize, in which he said, "We will not learn how to live together in peace by killing each other's children." And I think about that ideology, that like framework. Mm-hmm. And then I honestly am like moved to tears thinking about Trump. And you're just like, wow, imagine a president who thinks like that, Jimmy Carter, versus what we're headed into. So I think we were in good hands with him in a difficult time. I think he was a model citizen. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Do you know, it's interesting. From an economic perspective, he had a really tough go.
Yeah.
You know, recessions, what we called stagflation, high unemployment, high inflation.
Yep.
A lot of people think he was the model of a post-president.
Yeah.
Life, what he did and whatnot. You know, it's interesting. I love speeches, presidential speeches. And he gave one of the most famous presidential speeches. And
the malaise.
And it's not for good reasons.
No.
It's famous for being the, you know, the speech that Ronald Reagan like was able to like capitalize on.
Yeah.
Because it was the malaise speech. And it was when Reagan basically says, let's, you know, wake up America. Let's move on to something else. This is in a speech to our listeners where the former President Carter asked us to turn our temperatures down.
Yeah. You know, basically like, said, put on a sweater. You're going to have to
telling
adapt.
The American public like to do something. It was good advice, but it was a malaise speech.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't inspire, I guess.
I, of course, also want to add one of my favorite Carter details is that his mom, at age 68, joined the Peace Corps.
Oh, my.
So it was 1966, and she served in India, which was at the early stages of the Peace Corps. And it's just something that I always think about when I think about Jimmy Carter.
Yeah. Shireen, anything you want to add about these unfortunate, terrible situations with the Cybertruck explosion in Las Vegas or the New Orleans killing?
Yeah. I mean, I would just say I worry that this is a these kinds of acts are things that we're going to see more frequently in mm-hmm. this country. I'm also deeply worried, and I think all of us should be, about the level of trauma and radicalization that happens within our own military.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought they were so unfortunate.
Yeah.
And you just kind of get the feeling, I kind of think of this term, America on edge.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of get the feeling there might be more of these.
That's how I feel, too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just take the last minute or so of the first segment and talk about the inaugural. Today,
yes.
Governor Cox was inaugurated. I think it's our 17th governor?
I'll
look in my notes.
Some number
something
that feels
like that.
Low.
18th. It's 18th.
Okay,
it's 18th.
Yeah. So I did not get an invitation. I'm just kidding. I mean, I really didn't, but also I probably wouldn't go. Tell me about what you experienced, Natalie. Where was it?
You know, so this was at the Eccles Broadway Theater. First time an inaugural's been there. Usually yeah. it's at the Capitol.
Yep.
4 years ago when Cox was inaugurated, it was down in St. George.
In the depths of COVID.
Yeah, you had to be tested to be there. They wanted to have it an outdoor event, so
yeah.
it was held at Tuacon. But my goodness, Shireen, I was inspired.
Tell me how. What did you hear?
Everything from a governor's speech that was pitch perfect. He did a terrific job. Really spoke about social capital and how it's not government that makes our lives great, but the people of Utah that make our lives great.
Yeah.
The lieutenant governor also spoke, had a terrific outfit on. She was wearing pants. I thought it was wonderful. I also... couldn't believe they had a salsa band do America the Beautiful. It was just stunning.
I find that difficult to swallow given the anti-immigration
yeah,
rhetoric
yeah.
that we're hearing
I
out
understand.
Of this administration.
I understand. I was texting with some legislators, and one of them I texted with was our favorite Senator Dan McKay. And he told me that America the Beautiful, he wished that was our national anthem. And I agree with him.
Wow. All three of us agree.
Okay. It's a beautiful. And to see this Hispanic younger woman sing that
it.
On stage at Eccles Theater. But what the highlight, and then we'll drop to the next segment, but the highlight in some ways was everything's over with. It's been a great moment. And then the curtain went up and the full Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square and orchestra was behind the curtains and sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Wow. Chills, I bet.
It was, you know, the little snare drum that starts it out and whatnot. So it was terrific. And it was a good day to be a Utahn.
Okay, I love that. Well, we're going to head into a break, and when we come back, we'll have more local news. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. And Shireen, I forgot to mention that at the inaugural, the constitutional officers of the state are also sworn in. So this is in addition to the governor and lieutenant governor,
yeah.
the attorney general, the treasurer, and the auditor.
Yes.
All sworn in.
So I'm guessing our friend, former now, Auditor John Dougal was there as well, transition of power in that office. But
mm-hmm.
something that I noticed in the news about our new Attorney General, Derrick Brown, was that he immediately released his calendar to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it?
That sounds like Derrick.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan
yeah.
of Derrick Brown. Amazing guy. His wife, Emily Brown, was there with him. Typically at these things, the spouse holds
whatever they can swear on,
but
yeah.
in most cases it's some version of the Bible.
Yeah.
And she was there, Emily was there, and she's just a terrific representative of our state as the First Lady in the Attorney General's office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping, you know, for improvement in this office.
I think you'll see it.
The history that we've seen. I have to say Attorney General Brown taking the step to make that calendar public. Well, I do think there's a little bit of theatrics to it.
Yeah.
I actually think symbolically means a lot.
Yeah.
So I was grateful to see that.
One other just little interesting thing. So they have the presentation of the colors. And of course, you have the state flag with the U.S. flag. So it was the new flag.
Yeah.
But interestingly, on both sides of the stage, it was draped with flags. And they had three flags on each side.
With the old
flag. U.S., the old Utah flag, and the new Utah flag. I thought that was odd.
So I do think we're calling it the ceremonial.
Yeah, the ceremonial flag was there.
Sounds like a ceremony.
As well. So
tell me about some of the things that you think that we should be looking forward to seeing. What are some of the priorities that came out of either the speech or that you're seeing out of the Cox administration in this new, as we head into this new
yeah.
legislative year?
He released a new, I'll call it strategic plan for the state at his inaugural. I think it's called Built Here. And he's basically challenging our state to be a state of builders.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. And he's got a lot of great stuff in there. I'm sure you, our listeners look at it. But he's been pretty open in media commentary that housing and energy are the big two. And, you know, I would say if I was advising him that there's really a big three and you'd add water to that list.
Water to that list. So I noticed.
Including Great Salt Lake.
Yeah. I know two things about that. Let me first comment on the builders. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't there quite a speech given at the general conference about being builders?
Sounds right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, sounds right.
So I just want, to say what I think about that. Where I'm going with that is this, that I sometimes become quite frustrated with our political, I would say infatuation in the state, our political leaders' infatuations with developers.
Mm.
But to think about builders in the broader sense, I think we also have to be thinking about people who are building a stronger and more democratic society, which is what that speech at General Conference was about, if I'm not mistaken. So I would just ask that we think about what it means to kind of bring this idea of building holistically to the work that we're doing in our communities. And, you know, I love not seeing our state sold out to developers.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that when we're talking about housing and the impact.
It's so funny, different perspectives, right? Because I think of development as a really positive thing where you're investing.
I generally do, too.
Okay. And you're building, you know, for our state. And our governor wants to build 35,000 affordable housing units once in our state. Yeah. And to do that takes all of the financing and all of the construction, you know, and all of the trades and crafts to go do that. At least we're not, you know, that saying, it's got a swear word in it. I'll apologize in advance, but I think it's a fine one. You know, anybody, any jackass can knock down a barn. It takes a builder to build
one. Yeah. I think that's right. I guess I would just say, I think this is a moment in our society more broadly when we really need to be thinking about what it means to be builders of community.
Yeah.
Builders of intentional and thoughtful.
Yeah. And to your point, his speech was about social capital, which is about building families and communities and all those sorts of things.
So, and then I'll also say some of the things that you mentioned align really well with the priorities that came out of the Utah Senate leadership, which include water, housing, energy was number one on that list. You know, I guess I would say I would love to live in a state where it feels like the focus on that, even if it's more corporatized than I would prefer, is taking priority over culture war. Do you think that we're in a phase where we're going to see less of that this session?
I do, gut feel, but it's always there.
It's always there.
I mean, message bills and the like have been around. I remember when there was a big hubbub. This is early in my college years over censorship of cable TV.
Oh.
I mean, even the term cable TV, you don't even think of it very much, right? We stream and do those sorts of things. But, you know, legislative session starts January 21st. I look for it to be a very busy session.
Yeah. So one of the things that caught my attention in the news was that our state is facing a revenue shortfall. Basically, estimates show a $2.3 million deficit for fiscal year 2024 and nearly $24.5 million less in the general fund than anticipated. Talk to me about that. What should we be considering? Because I also saw in the Senate's, you know, list of priorities were further tax cuts. So how...
Yeah.
Help us understand this.
Well, an easy way to think of it is our economy has slowed. So that slows your revenue growth. And then we also have had multiple years of tax cuts. And so those accumulate, right? Those are rate changes that we don't have in 2025. You know, it's permanently affected your revenues when you lower taxes in prior years. And so that accumulates. And then also, you know, we just have a situation where there's a lot of uncertainty, Shireen.
Yeah.
It's we're calling it price uncertainty. We don't know what inflation's doing next. We don't know what rates are doing next. We don't know what long-term rates are doing next. And it tends to chill the economy. Inflation's come down, I'll round, to about 2.7%.
Yeah.
But it's stuck.
Yeah.
It's not coming down anymore. And it'll be difficult for the Fed to return to what we would think of a normal rate of interest while inflation's still above target.
Now, when you say it's come down, do you remember what it was at its highest?
Inflation?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many different ways to measure it, but on general, year over, 8%.
8%. Mm-hmm. So when you say that you're concerned or don't think that Biden handled inflation well, but we went from 8% to 2.7, Tell me how you feel like that's a failure.
Yeah, well, so I would credit the drop in inflation mostly to the Federal Reserve.
Ah, so right? It doesn't have to do with the president necessarily.
Right, but I would credit the increase to putting too much stimulus. It's not all of it's the not explanation. But if you remember, we're in COVID, Trump loses. Before he leaves office, he passes a big stimulus bill for COVID.
So Trump passed it.
Passed one.
I know.
And then Biden gets in, another. Does another.
I know.
And I know. Both of those I would take issue with.
Yeah.
Components of it.
I know, because you're consistent.
And then I found it so interesting that, you know, a Green New Deal never passed. But on the Republican side, they make it very clear that the Inflation Reduction Act built into it a lot of the components of the Green New Deal. And so, you know, some of the most offensive parts passed. And so we got a mess.
Sure.
That would be my reaction.
Yeah. And I would just add along with that, you know, the adding of jobs, manufacturing back in this country, the CHIPS Act, right? Thinking about advancing technologies being built back in this country.
I love the infrastructure investment.
Yeah.
I'll just say.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I get it.
Shireen, very, very local. It looks like Vail has reached an agreement with the ski patrol. That's really recent news. But
yes.
Mike, I think of you as an expert communicator and someone who understands marketing and public relations.
Okay.
I don't know if that's in your background or training, but okay, because
yes.
You're good at it.
Okay.
What have they been thinking?
Vail?
See no upside to what they've done.
Well, I was going to say, I hope we were going to talk about what I thought was one of the most incredibly precise ways to explain this, which was a sign being held frequently by folks who were out picketing, which said, you know, what we're asking, $23 an hour, what we're paid, $21, mm-hmm. and what a slice of pizza costs at a Vail resort, which is $25 a slice.
Pretty crafty.
Pretty clear.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what Vail Resorts was thinking, other than to say that this is what happens when, mm-hmm. I believe, when we have large conglomerations who feel like they can squeeze every penny out of workers and also devalue what I actually think is a really critical part of mountain mm-hmm. safety. So I know you're a bigger skier than I am mm-hmm. these days. Mm-hmm. Tell me, you know, what your experience or what you're thinking when you see.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's over $300 a day to buy a pass. The thing that I would have said to Vail is that the public relations hit over the holidays of
yes.
having a mountain that is not well-groomed, that is unsafe, that is not fully opened,
not
and
that
has
opened.
Long wait lines.
Yep.
That's
bad.
They're going to pay a price for that for years
right.
to come.
I think that's right.
So I think it was very unfortunate for our state.
A real miss.
And just as a reminder to listeners, we used to have a locally owned Park City Resort.
Yes, we did.
Due to a kind of crazy set of circumstances, it got bought by a publicly held corporation, Vail. And Vail also ended up, you know, with what some people would think of as the old Park West, the old, you know, different resorts. And it's the largest by, I think, acreage ski resort in the country. But wow.
And also one of the richest.
Yeah.
Yep.
A tough one. There's some other, what else do you want to talk about, Shireen?
Well, I have to say, I think, you know, heading into this legislative session, I guess I would just recommend to folks, if you don't know who you're represented by, you can go to le.utah.gov. You can find your representative. But we do have, and you should reach out to them when you hear about things that are happening that you support or are opposed to. Personal emails and personal contact goes a long way. I did notice we have a change already, and that is that Representative Berkland, who was known for legislation banning transgender girls from high school sports, deeply unenforceable and wildly invasive of privacy bathroom bills and locker rooms bills as well, has now resigned and will not be in our legislature this year. So I think that's a big change. I hope that we see, again, I would say a dialing back of these kind of culture wars that are deeply painful for folks who are in this community and love folks who are trans.
I had never worked closely with Representative Berkland, but she was she's very respected on Capitol Hill by her colleagues. She's a force of nature in terms of her ability to find progress and reach compromise on things. I don't know much about her transgender bill, but I do know her to be someone who has represented her area with a lot of, what would I say, just strength.
I would say maybe tenacity.
strength and tenacity. Because it's not,
Yeah.
And I love that saying, it's better to leave too early than too late.
Yeah.
And so when I see people walk away from power, I'm often want to thank them because, for one thing, she's not leaving in the middle of the session.
Yeah.
For another, for her to prioritize her family and for her to realize that it's a it's a part-time thing, gig that you do for a little while and then you walk away.
Yeah.
So I give her credit for that.
So I guess we'll see. There's a special election happening here in short order, and there will be a new representative for chunks of, I guess it's Morgan, Summit County, and we'll find out who that is soon.
We do have Trevor Lee proposing legislation to ban the Pride flag from Utah schools.
Yeah, we do. So again, back with this kind of, I would just say, really unnecessary nonsense and overreach of government, in my opinion, but also really just communicating very openly to folks that if this something like this gets passed and signed into law, that this is a hostile state for folks who are LGBTQ.
Yeah. Did you see the article about BYU and the press professors and whatnot?
No, tell me about it.
Well, we only have 15 seconds, so we'll have to save it for the next one. But just as a teaser to our listeners.
Yes. Well, I hope we also talk about the ProPublica article about militias in this state.
Never a dull moment. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gravani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.